it comes down to how long you can focus without getting distracted and how much you can endure pain by yourself.
You never know how strong you are until being strong is your only option.
It's really with one end goal in mind of a better cycling experience.
There's a huge overlap.
We're covering all these aspects of cycling.
It's not just about the high-level cyclists. It's not just about the health club.
Now it's about a bike, a power meter, technology, data.
It's about cycling, no matter where you do it and how you do it.
That's all I got.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap, presented by Stages Cycling. I'm your host, Bryce Hansen, and on this show, we talk about all things cycling, no matter how or where you do it. Our guest today is a former professional cyclist who's collected 6 national championships, 2 world championships, and 3 consecutive Olympic gold medals. We talk about what got her into bikes and how that led to the Olympics. We also talk about life after racing and her new business venture that's helping her build community in her hometown of Boise, Idaho. Her name is Kristen Armstrong Savola. Be sure to learn more about her studio at pivotbyka.com and on Instagram at pivotbyka. Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, yeah. It's great to be here, and I appreciate you having me on the show.
So many people know you for your accomplishments on the bike, but your career didn't start in the junior ranks like many of your competitors did. You started racing much later.
Yeah, I definitely did. You know, I was an athlete all my life. And just as a child, my father was in the military, and every 3 years I moved, and I kind of treated sports as a way to meet new people. And so I was active. But when it came to the bike, I pretty much rode my bike to my friend's house for transportation or to school and back. And as I got through high school, I played soccer and I swam and ran track competitively, and got to college and walked on the track team and didn't really enjoy it much. And so I ended up just playing intramurals for the rest of my college days. And when I graduated college, like a lot of people that have a background in sports, I realized after a couple years of graduating, I thought, oh my goodness, like nobody's telling me to go to practice anymore. And I better definitely keep up and keep in shape. And so I don't really know how I'm going to do this or what I'm going to do. So I decided that I was going to start running again because that was my background. And I did a little running, and I used to swim a lot. So I joined the local masters team. And then I had this janky mountain bike that I had all through college. It sat outside my sorority house. And I remember one day I thought, I'm going to really do something special. I'm going to ride my bike from my home to work one day. And it was about 9 miles. And I rode my bike from home to work one day, and it took me a long time to get my bike back. I got a ride home because there's no way I was going to ride back that same day. So I was a little bit thinking I overcommitted myself for sure. And so I decided that, you know, once I was brave enough, I eventually rode my bike back. And one thing led to the next. And my friend, she dared me to do a triathlon. And sooner than I knew it, I was swimming and biking and running. But it was more about, because I felt out of shape, because I didn't feel like an athlete anymore, and didn't have anything to do with competing again. And I think that when you have competitive blood in your system, it doesn't go away. And so one thing led to the next, and I was entering these little local races, and I ended up injured. And, you know, obviously that took me and actually transferred me over to riding bikes. And we happen to have one of the world's largest stage races right here in Boise, Idaho. I was working full time, and this local team, they were asked to compete in this race. It was called the HP Women's Challenge. It was around for 20 years, and the best of the best came. It was the most lucrative prize purse across the world. It was about $75,000 in the prize purse. And really, even today in women's cycling, that would be a massive prize purse.
Oh, absolutely.
And from there, you know, this local team, they got invited to do this race, kind of like a token, like, oh, you're local, we want to support you. And this team came to me and said, hey, will you join our team and compete? And I was like, there's no way. I've been watching these wonderful, competitive, successful women race in Boise for years. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to embarrass myself like that. So finally, after enough convincing, they talked me into it. And I started going out at night after work with my headlamp on and training and just training. And on the weekends, I would go ride the routes and I'd memorize the mile markers. And I would know the mile markers. I would have them memorized so that when I got dropped out of the race, I knew exactly how much further I had to go to finish. And surprisingly enough, by the end of the week, well, it was a 9-day race. And so by the end of those 9 days, I had 3 professional contract offers.
Wow.
And so I guess my work paid off. And
yeah, no kidding.
So my first team I signed with was T-Mobile back in 2000. It was actually for a contract in 2003, but the women's challenge that I did was in 2002. So I signed my first contract and I was well on my way to becoming a professional cyclist. And I think about it, and I think that's probably why often when I tell my story, it's really interesting because I go back and I have to remind myself like, wow, I'll never forget that day that I did ride my bike. I was a director at the YMCA and I rode my bike to the YMCA and I didn't ride home. And, you know, people are like, are you for real? And I said, yeah, you know, it's when you're an athlete all your life that I just believe it doesn't go away. You learn so much. And so maybe it just took a while for me to find what I was good at. So, yeah, in, you know, my career started and I quit my job and I was barely living. You know how it is. It's tough out there. And my first year, I was just happy to be on a team. And yeah, from there, you know, the rest was a huge, huge career full of journey after journey, things that I never thought I'd accomplish.
Wow. Well, there you go. Kristen Armstrong started as a commuter. And then what seems like overnight, you're on one of the best cycling teams in the country, racing professionally.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention, when I was working at the YMCA, I went from commuter to I think it might have been their first certification ever, but I was back in the 90s, I was a Johnny G's spin certified instructor.
You're kidding.
No kidding. And so I was teaching classes at the Y for quite a number of years and never thought I would be a professional in anything. Yeah, for sure.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up. Because becoming a professional cyclist, I mean, that's an accomplishment in itself. Just competing at the highest level, I know that's a dream that plenty of people are chasing. And so you reach that point. When did the idea of the Olympics come in? Or was it something that just happened organically?
Well, it didn't until it happened because back actually the Olympic trials. So I signed a contract with T-Mobile in 2003 and 2004, back in the day, they had a 1-day trial. So the winner who won, they got a spot to the Olympic Games. And so that was in Athens in 2004. And so the course was on the Redlands course, a really hilly course. And I was part of a, you know, obviously a very deep team filled with favorites. And I was the workhorse. And the team tactic was, you know, these two women are going to go set tempo and these two women are going to attack and play the card and, you know, make the other teams chase. So then the favorites on my team can go up and attack and win. And that was the plan. And so I was an instigator. I was somebody, and I'll never forget the spot on the concrete wall, the barrier up Redlands. I'll never forget where I was told to attack because that's how new I was. They told me where to attack. It wasn't like when you have this feeling you need to attack. It was like, on this spot, you're going to attack. And it was almost like I dreamed about it for like 48 hours. But when I hit that spot, I attacked. And I was off the front with Christine Thorburn from Webcor back in the day. And, you know, over the course of, you know, an hour and a half left of the race or 2 hours, the team, you know, the favorites kept on trying to chase and bridge across. And there was a point in time where
no one followed.
Yeah, no one came across. And it was basically down to Christina and myself. And I won the final sprint and was on my way to Athens. It was unreal. And it was a really hard time because not often do I talk about how uncomfortable it was. You know, imagine going and being part of the best team in America and, you know, you have a huge celebration that's planned for whomever from the team was going to make the Olympic team because T-Mobile was so strong. We just figured there was going to be somebody from our team. And then it was me, Kristen, the dark horse that wasn't going for the Olympics for years like the rest of these women. And honestly, it was very uncomfortable. My teammates had a very difficult time looking at me. And I think obviously when you train for something so long throughout your career and some newbie comes and wins, and that's not even the team plan.
Right.
You know, and so that's how it unfolded. And that's the interesting thing about road racing is it's very different than time trialing, which became my love, because there are tactics involved and there are variables that you have no control over. And on that day, it just worked out in my favor. And I think that, you know, obviously that moment was one of the life changers. You know, it was like, as a child, you watch the Olympics, and most athletes as children, especially in America, they look at the Olympics every 4 years and they watch it and they think, oh, what if one day, but not many of us ever hold on to that dream. I mean, we always say what if, but does it really ever happen? And that's who I was. It was never, you know, off of a college scholarship to play sports. It was just for the, like you said, the true passion.
Right.
I absolutely loved riding my bike.
And that's a really good point, because I think it can be really easy to get caught up in the training and the racing and the results and lose sight of, hey, this is fun. I love to ride my bike, and that's why I'm doing it in the first place. You found a lot of success in the time trial. Time trial is a race against the clock. It's a solo, all-out effort. What I would say is the true sufferfest of cycling. Why do you think that this event suited you so well?
You know, when it comes to the time trial, I've raced with a lot of women who are super strong on the bike in the road race, or super strong in a team time trial. And often they come to me and they go, why can't I time trial by myself? And so that brings me to why was that, and why did that end up being my thing, and why did I love it, and why did I succeed in that particular event? And I truly believe that it's a mindset. And I wouldn't say that on paper, some of the strongest road racers out there, I guarantee you that physically, if you look at our power and everything about us, we're not that much different. It comes down to how long you can focus without getting distracted and how much you can endure pain by yourself. I think it's very different for people who are out in a road race and somebody is attacking and you're following them. You're kind of forced to not get dropped and you're feeling, oh my gosh, I have to be there. I have to be there. When you're out in a time trial and you're in the moment, they call it the race of truth for a reason. You're in your mind so much, and you have to somehow, without anybody in front of you, tell yourself to go harder and harder and harder. For a while, I thought, well, why can't you do that? And now when people ask me for help, I'm like, how do I break this down? And so you start figuring out really fast that it actually is more difficult than I thought it was. And it's something that maybe came to me living in Boise, Idaho, when I first started racing my bike and doing intervals. I didn't have group rides. For example, I've coached many people who part of their training week, all they want to do is like, can I please hook up with this group ride? I'm like, why is it all about group rides? And so I always have this joke inside. I'm like, yeah, everyone keep doing their group rides, because every time I go out and I'm suffering by myself, I keep on thinking about how, oh, that's okay. I'm just going to learn. I'm going to train myself to suffer harder. And so I used to focus on focusing. That sounds strange, but I used to do little things like try to catch myself going in and out of focus. So if I had something as simple as a tempo ride for 30 minutes, I would try to see how many times I'm like thinking about my snacks and my dinner. And have you ever, the analogy I like to use is, have you ever driven from like work to home and you get home and your roommate says, hey, so how was traffic? And you're like,
traffic. And you can't remember.
Traffic, yeah. And you're like, I don't even remember the stoplights, right? I mean, seriously. And so to me, that's what you try not to do in a time trial. Because if you can't remember, then that means you weren't completely focused on producing power. So anyway, and then obviously once that's figured out, then you have this whole technical side of the time trial and aerodynamics and all the equipment and all that. But if you can't get your mind there first and get to a certain point, then don't even worry about that. Don't worry about that other stuff yet.
I don't think that anybody wakes up one day and just says, I can suffer. Mm-hmm. Right, with that, it's built over time. So do you think that, I know that you lived in a military family, yeah. You traveled a lot, you're probably in uncomfortable situations a lot. Do you think that from an early age, you were training your mind to be able to endure just uncomfort? I mean, that's cycling right there. It's just being comfortably uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because people ask me all the time if they thought that, you know, when did I learn to suffer? And I always say that people ask, you know, what's the number one thing that you think has made you successful? And exactly what you just said that not a lot of people look at is, I always go back to like, my foundation is my character. And I developed character at a very young age. And so like you said, why wouldn't I have developed this ability to suffer as a young child? And a lot of times I think even when we're building and we're developing our character as a young child, I don't think that when something happens to us, we go at age 9, we're like, oh, great. So I've just like learned I'm stronger character now because of this just happened to me. Now that we're older, we're adults, we look back and we're like, oh my gosh, that moment made me so strong, stronger than ever. And so I think that suffering happens. Obviously, you have to want to suffer and you have to want to embrace the pain in order to win. And so, yes, I do think that that happens as a child, but I do think that in the harder conditions, as I grew as a cyclist, you know, whether it was those days where you can't feel your hands and you can't shift anymore, and you're like, why am I doing this sport? Like, why? And then maybe I look back and I'm like, oh, nothing can be as painful as frozen hands going down like a really fast ascent, trying to keep up with your competitors. And so I think that, you know, obviously you have to learn it and you have to experience it as a child and a teenager and as you're growing up. But I also think that you have to place yourself in situations. I always used to joke in races. I'm like, oh, they're like, how do you live and train in Boise, Idaho? I'm like, well, why would I want to live somewhere nice and sunny for 365 days a year? Because it makes me soft. Like, I have ridden in a lot of wind before. I've ridden in a lot of, you know, in the middle of like sleet and hail and, you know, Colorado weather. It's Idaho weather. It's the same. So I also say that some of that made me tough. But anyway, I think it's just like anything. You have to recognize that you need to practice being tough in order to be tough.
It's weird. It's a very challenging skill. That it's definitely a skill, I think, that's built over time. And
I think it is too.
So there's a common race scenario in bike racing where one or more riders have attacked off the front of the peloton, the main group, and established a breakaway. One rider in the peloton decides, I should have gone with them. I think that's the winning move. Yes. And I believe I have what it takes to go off on my own and bridge the gap, right? Up to the breakaway. And there's a moment where you're in the middle, you've put in a massive effort to get there, but you still have a long way to go. And you have to make this decision of, okay, am I cutting my losses and going back to the peloton? Or am I going to keep pushing forward and try and make it up to the breakaway? Because if I have any chance at winning this thing, that's where I need to be. How do you push past that moment when it's hard and you're tired and quitting sounds like a pretty good option at this point? How do you get in the mindset to say, no, I'm going for it, I'm all in?
So it's funny because you didn't even finish the scenario and I already was going in my brain. It's like just second nature. I already was telling myself what I would do. And the minute I'm there and I'm suffering, I immediately go to how I feel later, how I feel when the race finishes, how I feel when I'm back in the peloton behind, back in the group behind. I think about how painful that is for me because I obviously wanted to bridge across to the front group. And I then start in my brain saying how amazing it would be to get to that front group. And then I actually can be a player in the end result. And then I think about the next day. This is crazy, but I do this. I think about the next day and ask myself what I want to live with. And if I don't give everything I have at that moment and don't try, then I'm going to have a lot of regrets until my next race. And that is a lot more suffering, days of suffering, than it is to maybe suffer for another 10, 20 minutes to try to bridge that gap, depending on how big that gap is. Hopefully it doesn't take that long, but sometimes it does. And so I go through scenarios and where I want to be. And that's what motivates me to basically push forward and never give up. Because I feel like when you give up and you get swallowed by that group behind again, then there's just so many regrets about everything. And I think it's hard to come out of that hole. It doesn't go away in a day. As an athlete, it sticks with you. There's so many, I can't stand replaying my races because it's a control that I had. It was one of the controllables. I had the decision inside of me to whether or not to bridge the gap or not. And I just have to find the strength. And so that's why I imagine these different scenarios and how I would feel post-race on all three of those.
And that's something that you can apply to any part of life, any goal that you're chasing. At some point, it's hard and you're probably thinking, gosh, maybe I should go back. Kristen, you've accomplished a lot in your career, but did you ever think about quitting?
I thought about quitting all the time. In fact, I think some of my biggest regrets were going back and retiring from the sport and making comebacks twice. If you talk to my support team, my coach, my husband, anyone that was involved with me, my team manager, when I made a comeback for the second time to Rio, I remember one of my closest friends and my team manager, she looked at me and said, "Kristen, can we just try to have a little bit of fun this time? Because every time you come back, it just sucks. Like, it's horrible." And she always talks about how she gained a bunch of weight just from me coming back.
Oh gosh.
Because of the stress. And though it all ended up being like a fairy tale, like, okay, I ended up winning, it was almost not even possible. In fact, I was thinking about Tokyo being postponed and thinking about how closely cracked I was going into Rio. And if somebody told me I had another year, I'm not sure. I don't know what I would have done. I was at the point of being completely done. And the reason why is because my first time coming back, going to London, I had just become a mom. And I thought it was a great goal until, you know, you have like five sleepless nights or you're traveling with your pack and play to through the airport, going to a race, and you're in the race and you're just like, what am I doing? You cross the finish line, you see this like beautiful little baby and they don't really care what you're doing. And you're just like, what am I doing? And the energy and effort it takes. And then retiring again and then thinking that I don't even know where these crazy thoughts come. But it was like 15 months out. And I'm just like, I was working full-time at a hospital. And I remember going to my husband and saying, I really miss having a goal. Like, I'm just so driven towards goals. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, you know, marathon runners, they pick like, you know, maybe 2-3 races a year and they work and they don't have a hard time having an athletic goal. So why can't I have an athletic goal? And my husband's like, well, what would you think about doing? And I said, I don't know. Maybe just choose like a big time trial and go after it, but work full time and be a mom. And I think I can do it. And he's like, well, what kind of like, what time trial? There's no time trials around. Like, and I said, I don't know, like nationals. And he's like, oh no, what are you talking about?
Nationals, no big deal.
Yeah. Right. And so I continued working and in 2015 went to national championships and I ended up winning it. And then my husband's like, we're done, right? And I was like, well, you know, world championships is in America. It's in Richmond. It's never been in Richmond, like any time in America since my career. Why wouldn't we just, I mean, it's easy to get the family over there. It's not like it's in Europe. Just one more big time trial, no big deal. He's like, okay. So I'm working full time, like full on hospital. And I go to Richmond and I get fifth. And top three go on to the Olympic Games. And I got fifth. And so I was like, well, I guess that's it, you know? And I started thinking about it and I thought, well, I was top American. So why wouldn't I be selected for the Rio team? Because nobody got top three. And my husband's like, seriously, Kristen, are we really doing this? And so when I think about it, that was only 15 months of hard training. I could barely make 15 months. And so people always are asking me about my career and how long it was. And I can truly say that I don't think that I could have made it to London or Rio without those 2 years of break. So I think about the athletes now and I think about how they haven't just gone for 4 years, they're going for a fifth year. And that's really, it's really hard. So yeah, I have had setbacks and I have had times that I want to quit. I've had times where I've texted everyone that's involved with anything that has to do with me training in the sport. And I, in one mass message, I've said, I quit, don't even respond to me and don't try to talk me out of it. So, it's not easy. I've had injuries. I had between London and Rio, I had 3 hip surgeries and a spine surgery.
Oh,
so my body has, everyone says, oh, the bike is great. It's not impactful. To a certain extent, until you sit on the bike for like hours a day, you know, for 10 years. So, you know, I am human. And though people may look on the outside as it was just a piece of cake and easy, you know, I've read books from athletes who have written their biography and they talk about how they travel around with their nanny and they have their this and they have their cook and they have their that. That wasn't Kristen. That wasn't me. My husband and I were the ones taking care of Lucas. Everything I would say was done on a very tight budget. I was no different in women's cycling. You know, I never had a contract that was 6 figures. In fact, I only had 1 year in my career where I made over $50,000. Wow. So most of my career, I was between, I would say, $20,000 and $35,000.
Wow.
And that was after winning gold medals. So that's the reality of it. And that's why, you know, you've heard me speak about working and, you know, people ask me still like, why do you work? And I'm like, gosh, I wish everyone would understand that Olympians, it doesn't equal like retired football player. It's very different. So
right, cush life from here on out.
Yeah. So there's, you know, everyone has their story though. I think that no matter what, when you're successful at something, there's not, though on the outside, it may look differently or feel differently to people. Every person who succeeds at anything has had their story and it's not easy.
I've noticed the trend that you tend to set goals like the nationals and then worlds and the Olympics and you get there and then it seems like immediately next it's okay, what's the next thing?
Yeah.
And so you take down 3 consecutive Olympic gold medals and then it seems like you go, okay, what's next? Pivot. So talk about pivot. What's the vision behind pivot? Because it's a unique gym and a really, really cool concept.
Yeah. So thanks for asking about pivot. You know, as an athlete who has been to 4 Olympic Games and has won 3 Olympic gold medals and is a mom, you know, I came back and retired twice from the sport, came back twice. And it wasn't because all I wanted to do was win gold medals. To be honest with you, I didn't realize this was happening when I made comebacks, but I had gone back to work after retiring and after Beijing. I had a child. I was working at a hospital system. I went back to work full time because I wanted it to be normal. I just wanted a normal job. I'd come home, I'd work 8 to 5, and I'd just be like everyone else. And what I realized was really quickly that nothing was going to satisfy me like going after a gold medal. Like, how does somebody come off of a gold medal and actually feel accomplished in anything else they do in life? Like, it's actually almost a lost cause. You know, I'm a mom. It's like the best thing that's ever happened. And I win 1 gold medal. And from there, how do you even like, what do you go after? Like, oh, you know, you're an amazing project manager. I mean, what do you do to feel fulfilled? And so I come back out of sport and I'm like, well, gosh, I know a good goal. I can try to go for a 2nd gold medal. Awesome. So that was a huge risk. Of course, it takes risk to win. So I go back and I win. And I win as a mom the first time. And then I retire and I go back to work. St. Luke's, here I am, back at the hospital, like full-time, corporate, like, let's do this. This is what I'm ready for. I'm for sure done. And then I get going and I'm like, it's still like, what am I doing? Like I don't have a huge, massive goal. And someone best put it that I wasn't, people like me, the personality I have, I need to be stretched, meaning people that I was working for in a huge hospital system, they weren't stretching me. Like I wasn't feeling
that uncomfort maybe.
Yeah. And so what do? While I'm working full time, I'm like, why not? Why not go for a third gold medal? And this time I'm going to be over 40. Isn't that crazy? So to be honest with you, after retiring from Rio, I was so tired and I knew I couldn't do this again. And I thought long and hard about what am I going to do to be fulfilled like forever? And what I realized, which is amazing, is I realized that it can no longer be for me. It can't be an individual goal that I'm going after because nothing's going to top the pinnacle of sport. Like nothing. No matter how hard I try to make it about something personal, it won't be satisfying. So I decided to do something different and to go after something that would help other people. And if I can help other people, whether it's through coaching the next generation to the Olympic Games in Tokyo, or if it was through helping people in the state of Idaho accomplish their goals and dreams, then maybe that would be something that would be fulfilling to me. So I opened up these fitness centers called Pivot Lifestyle and Fitness. And what they are, and the reason why they're different is we have a 10,000 square foot studio, and it has four studios within the main space. One of them is a cardio weight room. And then we have a heated and non-heated yoga studio. We have a functional training and we have a cycling studio. And they're all, I would say, at high level boutique levels within one building. I wanted to create community and I wanted to share with everybody in the community, if you want to be active, to me, you're an athlete. So why wouldn't the community members and other people outside of competitive sport deserve to know exactly what it took me to be successful? And so when I was developing what's going to go in each studio, I decided to share everything that made me successful throughout my career. So number one, there was a time that I used yoga for a couple reasons. I used yoga to stretch, and I also used yoga. I used it for heat training when I raced in humid conditions. Now, there's a lot of obviously benefits around mindfulness and relaxation and recovery. And then functional training studio, after all of my setbacks and injuries, and as I had a child and got older, you have to do work off the bike. So in order to be your best and to continue to be an endurance junkie or be active, you have to do things to support your body functionally from head to toe. And then obviously, cycling, that's a given. You know, I couldn't imagine opening a fitness center without cycling. And then on top of that, we have our health services, which we have massage. We have a registered dietitian. We're bringing in annual exams so that people, they want to be their best, but what if they don't know what they don't know? So we need to encourage people to take care of themselves no matter where they are in their journey of health. We've partnered with health insurance companies. We've partnered with different employers, businesses, and it is a different model. The reason why the word lifestyle is in our name is because it's about supporting your active lifestyle for years to come. Whether you're playing golf or tennis, the programs we have are not trends. They are programs that will be there for life. And I believe in 10 years from now, our programming will be the same because we're not trying to keep up with the latest fad. We're saying that these are essential for being your best if you want to be active. And yoga's probably been around longer than any movement that's ever been in existence. Functional training is no different than kind of a step above your physical therapy. And then cycling is a non-impactful way to aerobically get your heart rate up. Your lungs and heart don't know the difference. So whether you're a runner, you're a hiker, you're a cyclist, the cycling classes that we offer are very unique. They are all written by me So I made that decision. I wanted consistency for our members. And so I write the program and our coaches deliver those rides.
You couldn't possibly know what you're talking about when it comes to writing programs.
Yeah, you know, and I love it when people come in, we don't ask them like, where have you been? Why haven't you been to class? We just basically reverse it and say, we hope you've been outside. Idaho is outdoorsy and we want people to get outside when they can. You know, I obviously, when we were building out our cycling studio, you know, if you met my husband, Joe, he's a engineer and he is the one who worked on my bikes behind the scene to make them fast, lightweight, you name it. And you can imagine, we were very particular when we decided which bikes we wanted to go with. It was by far the Stages bikes were, they were on the top from the very beginning. You know, it was, we believe that we need to bring the indoor world into what we feel outdoors and that we need to bring the outdoor world inside and they need to feel as similar to what they do outdoors. And there really isn't another offering out there on the market that you can say, just like the podcast is called, it doesn't bridge the gap enough. And not only are you looking at your fit and how accurate and how I'm like the person who knows like by the millimeter, the saddle height is wrong. And so that the adjustability is crucial. The way you feel on the bike is crucial. But even for the people who are really into the more technical pieces and the physiology and the power, the gap between what you may see in an indoor bike versus what you see as an outdoor rider on a indoor Stages bike, that's relative. It's very comparable to what you see indoors and outdoors. And so that consistency is really, really important. It was very important for us. And I'm telling you, we couldn't be happier with the support that we've received from Stages, but also the quality that we expect. And I'm just happy that we didn't have to go out and develop our own bike because that's kind of my husband's way. I'm like, oh my goodness, right. We found a good partner. So
as a business owner and probably one of the most challenging times, especially in the fitness industry and with Pivot, where community is such an important piece of that, what are you doing right now to help foster that community and help people feel connected to your gym when they may not be able to actually come in the doors right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. You know, immediately we brought our classes online just like most people, but we did it a little bit differently in that we brought our own instructors and we filmed live. The important piece to anybody going to group classes is consistency. So what had happened, you know, you go on anything social right now and you're like, if I see another workout, another HIIT workout, another whatever workout, like they're everywhere. So access isn't a problem, but there's something about connecting with the coach that you're a member of. So that was important that we didn't just take anyone's program and offer it, that we actually brought our own programming and coach's face to our members. But also, you know, we decided to keep it consistent. So we offered classes twice a day at the same time. So at 6 and noon, Monday through Friday, and at 8 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. And so for 6 weeks now, nobody wonders when our classes are. Nobody wonders, how do I choose a class? These are our classes every day consistently because people like schedule. And so we believe in meeting people where they are. So there was a number of people who engaged in these live classes. However, there's a number of people who have become teachers because they're homeschooling their child from home and maybe they don't have time. And so we developed some other platforms. So for example, I started a Strava club. So I have definitely different challenges that you can accomplish, whether you're a walker, you're a hiker, you're a runner, you're an outdoor cyclist or indoor cyclist. And so a lot of those can definitely be shared right into our, I would call it our outdoor community. And nothing you do indoors needs to stop. And so we created some interesting challenges for our community. And, you know, we did this after about 4 weeks of offering online classes. And it was within 24 hours, I had over 100 members of people who locally wanted to be part of this club because they wanted accountability. We all want a community and accountability. And how that moves forward, it's great. Now we can do meetup hikes and meetup rides once we can get together again. So we've already formed this community virtually that we're going to be able to, everything we've done, I want to do it with purpose and I want to do it because we can do this 9 months from now, not just as a Band-Aid. And so on Monday, we will be launching our video on demand library. We have 100 classes that we have filmed while we've been closed. And so now that's going to be a great access point for our members. And we've also created educational opportunities and you name it. But, you know, it hasn't been easy, but I expect when we open in the middle of May, I expect that there's going to be members who are ready to jump right in. And I expect that there's going to be members who are not quite ready. And some of these opportunities virtually that we have designed and offered, they'll still continue for those who aren't comfortable. You know, we've also have taken, you know, online cycling classes to those. We have many people who don't have daycare and they don't have an opportunity to get outside. And so the indoor ride is still their choice of getting, you know, a good workout in. And so we've done some things to inspire them through some coaches. And our programming, which is also through Stages, the platform, it's about the familiarity with some of the way it feels. And again, not pushing out random, you know, different platforms to people because they're used to, you know, what we offer. And so it's been great to be able to go in studio and record some of those for our members.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for joining me and telling a bit of your story and also sharing your new business venture with us. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat.
Yeah, it was great being on the podcast, and I appreciate all that Stages does for Pivot and all they do for myself. And I love the relationship, and all the best to you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. We really appreciate your support, so if you want to know when next week's episode is available, be sure to subscribe. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review and let us know what you think. Remember to learn more about Pivot at pivotbyka.com and keep up with their community on Instagram at pivotbyka. I'm Bryce Hansen, and this is Bridge the Gap.